Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, Pod Shots.
How are you?
I don't know what's going on with me.
I can see that. I believe you.
Strange. Power. I feel like I got so much. I got so much anger.
I can see that. I can see you don't want to be here. I can see you're scared. I can see you don't know what's happening to you. I can see that you don't want to hurt anybody. It's going to be all right.
Got a clear shot. Standing by.
I don't want them shooting me.
I'm not going to shoot you. You guys, this is my buddy Max. I told you about Max. No one shoots at Max. You and me, okay? It's just you and me talking. Whoa, whoa. Stay right there. Stay right there. Just be careful. The brake is the electricity.
I just wanted everyone to see me.
He makes a move, you take that shot.
How about you come with me?
Okay.
Go somewhere we'll talk. Away from all these people, okay?
Yes.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Podshots. I am your host, Eric Williams. For this episode, we are discussing the 2014 film The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Ugh.
Written by a whole host of people, including Alex Kurtzman, Roberto Orsi, Jeff Pickner, my mom, James Vanderbilt, and the film was directed by Mark Webb and stars Andrew Garfield, Emma Stone, Jamie Foxx, Dane DeHaan, and Sally Field. Here to discuss the film with me is my Plain Label Podcast co-host, Mrs. Rachel Zelag.
What up?
And returning guest, Mr. Cameron Rice.
Hello.
Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that this podcast is brought to you by the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. Miss Cruz, what? Mrs. Zelag, apologies. You have been drinking a few things, I would suspect. So what have you been drinking and what are you drinking currently?
Well, I started out the day with... This is a good one. You'll be excited for me.
I am excited.
We did... some mixed berries, some cherry lime sherbet, vodka, and 7-Up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very spring drink.
That sounds good.
And then I kind of got bored, and I went to the usual.
Captain and Diet.
Captain and Diet.
Is that what you're having now?
It's in my hand as we speak.
Nice. Cameron, how about you?
Okay, so I had a couple batch... 19s. Mm-hmm. And when I ran out of those, I had a couple blue moons, and I'm still a few blue moons. I got a couple more to go. And then I figured I'd need a pick me up a pepper. So I had a coffee with some Kahlua, and then I had another coffee with some, Bailey's.
That's great. I like that I'm the one who's taking it easy tonight. I am having a
grape vodka.
No. Taking it easy. That's my, you know, getting intense, kind of serious kind of drink. I'm having, this is my, I don't know, third Sam Adams Boston Lager. So,
which is original?
Wah. Pretty standard. Pretty boring.
They have the summer one out. Have you tried that?
No, I didn't. I haven't tried that.
I want to try it. I feel like it will be like Lightning Kugel Summer Shandy, which is like my favorite summer drink.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like something worth efforting.
I know. Well, I kind of want to make summer Arnold Palmer's with like icy vodka and like lemonades, like, oh, or maybe some summer shandy. So we'll see how that works out.
Mm-hmm. We're also
drink review after that one.
Yeah. We're also going to see how this works out. We're going to begin our discussion on 2014's Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Every day I wake up knowing that the more people I try to save, the more enemies I will make. And it's just a matter of time before I face those with more power than I can overcome.
I'm so sorry, I'm late.
I had a traffic thing.
Did your traffic jam have anything to do with being, I don't know, shot at by machine guns?
Yeah. Oh, that was implied. I was implying that.
Peter Parker. Harry Osborn.
You're gonna want to see this.
Oscorp.
And you
under surveillance.
Why?
Isn't that the question of the day?
something you're not telling me yet, May.
I once told you that secrets have a cost. The truth does, too.
My name is Richard Parker. I have discovered what Oscorp was going to use my research for. I have a responsibility to protect the world from what I know they're capable of.
What is all this?
The future.
We literally can change the world. What about Peter?
Not everyone has a happy ending.
This is bigger than you, Peter.
I made a choice. This is my path.
Soon, everyone in the city will know how it feels to live in a world. Without Spider-Man.
And the IMDb plot synopsis for the film is as follows. And this is written by Sony, so don't blame me. Blame me for just for the delivery. We've always known that Spider-Man's most important conflict has been within himself.
And his mom.
The struggle between the ordinary obligations of Peter Parker and the extraordinary responsibilities of Spider-Man. But in The Amazing Spider-Man 2, Peter Parker finds that his greatest battle is about to begin. It's great to be Spider-Man. For Peter Parker, there's no feeling quite like swinging between skyscrapers, embracing being the hero, and spending time with Gwen. But being Spider-Man comes at a price. Only Spider-Man can protect his fellow New Yorkers from the formidable villains that threaten the city. With the emergence of Electro, Peter must confront a foe far more powerful than he. As his old friend, Harry Osborn, returns, and Peter comes to realize that all of his enemies have one thing in common, Oscorp. So, before getting into this discussion specifically, last year when Amazing, or a few years ago, was it 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
When Amazing Spider-Man came out, Rachel, myself, and Scotty Young talked about it, and we had the fairly unpopular opinion that we appreciated the reboot better than, or more than the first Spider-Man movie.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding.
An unpopular opinion?
Yeah, I know that Cameron is a... You weren't a fan of the first film, right, Cameron?
I don't hate it, but I have a lot of problems.
You like the Tobey Maguire shit better?
Yes.
Because, seriously?
We'll get into it with this one. I'm not gonna bum rush my thesis yet.
Okay.
So, that being said, this is the continuation of the... of this sort of style of this cast, obviously, and you know, the more Sam Raimi-less aesthetic, I guess, the more like modern, slightly more realistic aesthetic, I would think.
Yes, agreed.
So, that being said, let's start with Mrs. Zleg. What did you think of this movie, just in general?
I didn't like it as much as the first one.
Mm-hmm.
There were some parts of it that I thought were, I don't want to use the word hokey, but I'm going to, because I'm not sober enough to think of another word.
I like that.
I just feel like it, okay, like what I like about the newer reboots of superhero movies is that they are on the more serious side.
Okay.
And I understand that this Spider-Man is more like smart-assy wisecracking, but like this was making fun of itself in its own movie, and I did not enjoy that at all. I didn't like that it called attention to the fact that like he is Spider-Man and this is a Spider-Man movie. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like they're doing the Spider-Man. Somebody played the Spider-Man theme song during the movie or whatever.
Sure. It's his ringtone.
His ringtone, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, come on.
Who wrote that in this universe?
Right. Or like they're like, you know, when they're doing the fight scene at the end where they're like playing a song or
doing the itsy bitsy spider.
Yeah. I mean, like those are the things like like, the reason I like Superman is, like, the reboot is because they don't ever, first of all, they don't ever call him Superman. They even bleep it out. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's so realistic. It's so not throwing it in your face. And this was too much of throwing it in my face.
I see. So you were conflicted and you didn't like it as much as the first one.
No, I really didn't. And there were just some parts that were like, we want you to feel these feelings, where I know we've talked about this, where, like, if somebody wants me to feel feelings and I don't, I'm like, fuck you. I'm not going to feel them just because you want me to.
Yeah, it's not quite, I don't think it's as egregious as the incredibly, extremely loud and incredibly close.
Right, yes. But.
But there, I get what you're saying.
There were just, I mean, it was. I don't know. There were parts I liked, but there were a lot of parts where I was almost cringing during that scene, where I was like, oh God, ugh. But yeah. I liked some of the parts, Cameron. So sorry.
I think that before I let Cameron go and explain his thesis, right. I think that I liked this more than most people did. I think.
I didn't hate it. Because I love Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone. I think they're fucking adorable together.
Okay. I think that I can very clearly see a lot of the problems that I... You know, and I will say I went Lady Z-Lag on this, to where I didn't read any reviews. I don't know what the general opinion is of the film, except for I get the sense that it's not...
So you went Lady Z-Lag in that you didn't do any research.
That's what I'm saying without saying it.
Yerp.
So, I get the sense, just from what Cameron said to me that it's not generally thought of as being very successful. And I completely get that. I get, you know, a lot of the things that don't work, and many of the villains, if not all of the villains, don't work for me. There are things about the film that I can't seem to help but enjoy. And I don't know that if that's because the film has actually earned the enjoyment, or if it's just I'm so invested in the names of these people, like, oh, it's Peter Parker, so I have all of this baggage that goes along with it. And whether the film is written or directed or acted in a way that I would normally like, because of that baggage, I am nostalgic for those feelings, I guess. So I bring a lot to it. So I think that I probably enjoyed it, I think, the most out of the three of us.
No, I wouldn't say that. Like, I wouldn't say I didn't enjoy it, because... Well,
then you and I are probably around the same area then. I think we're grading it a lot higher than what Cameron is about to.
I enjoy Andrew Garfield. Like, the first one I was very... Because, like, I mean, we've talked about the other Spider-Mans, and you know that I hate them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Tobey Maguire is an idiot in those movies. He's a fucking bumbling asshole. Like, he doesn't know what's going on. And Kirsten Dunst apparently doesn't take any acting classes, and just, like, her main role is like, hey, we want you to show up and scream. Mm-hmm. And that's fine for people who are stupid, but, the Amazing Spider-Man reboot for me was like a breath of fresh air. And okay. I love the Andrew Garfield, like, teenage, kind of almost like skateboardy version of Spider-Man. I like that a lot more than Tobey Maguire. And so I went into this being like, you know what? I really like the whole concept of these characters, and I like what the casting of these people did with this movie. And so I know I said there were a couple scenes where I cringed, and I'm not going to take that back, but I still enjoyed this 17,000 times more than any shit that Tobey Maguire put out there.
Okay. Cameron, I know that this is something that you've been prepping for. You've been building up. So let me hear it. I know that there's been some wild statements on your part that I've seen about, you know, this being the worst of this and that sort of thing. So let me hear what your concerns are about this film.
Yeah, well, I think it's funny. People have – it is so funny to me that people will – and, you know, people like what they like, but people will openly jump to the defense of a movie that costs $250 million to make and is such corporate crap, than they will because it has a character name that they know.
Sure.
Quicker than they would jump to the defense of any independent film that was hard to make. People have gotten furiously angry at me for not liking this movie. So I will say, I know I put on Twitter maybe about a week ago that, this was my number two worst of the year behind RoboCop. Having dwelled on it and thought about it more and really kind of dissected it in my head, I think it's reached number one.
Really?
This is my worst of the year. This was, in broad strokes, brutally boring. Now, okay, before I go on a tear, I think the Spider-Man scenes in the beginning are a lot of fun. I think him swinging around is great. I think the scenes...
I love the slow motion.
Yes. And I think, like, someone pointed this out, and I think it's a great point, that just the simple addition of adding wind sounds, which none of the other ones, even Amazing, the first Amazing didn't do that, adds such a great effect to the film of him swinging around.
It's so much more realistic.
Well, it made me feel tense for him like I hadn't before.
Like you're riding a 3D roller coaster ride.
Sure.
Yeah, so I like that. I agree that the Emma Stone, Andrew Garfield scenes are, for the most part, like the best part of the movie. And then I think that's kind of what I liked. And I really did go into this movie hoping. I didn't like the first one, but I didn't hate the first one. Like, the first one to me just felt like a bunch of missed opportunities. It just kind of, and this film suffers from this too, which is kind of like, well, you know all this stuff already, so we'll just kind of lip service things as opposed to showing you things.
The thing that I have that you don't, both of you, is complete and utter comic book ignorance.
Right.
And I had no idea what was going to happen in this movie.
And that's totally fine. And my problems are not spoilers. We're gonna get into spoilers, right? Like, there's
sure, no, absolutely spoilers.
Yeah, yeah. That scene I think works well. There are scenes in this movie that I think work individually as a moment, but when you think of them as a larger scope into the whole film, it doesn't work. If that makes sense, it's almost like, oh, that's an interesting scene or that's an interesting idea. And then when you think of that as a whole, you're like, wait a minute. So to me, a good example is, Spider-Man with the fireman's hat, which a lot of people point to is like, oh, that's so fun. That's so Spider-Man. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, wait a minute. If I like expand this a little bit in the movie world, are you telling me people are burning and near death and Spider-Man took the time to grab someone's hat to be cute and funny?
Well, it's kind of that problem where they I guess I can see this to where it's the film wants to be serious, sort of, but be campy and goofy, sort of.
Well, the thing about it is, like, Andrew Garfield's character is serious, but he also uses, like, humor in his character, and so, like, that is just, like, a part of that. Like, when he stops, Jamie Foxx, and he, you know, is like, don't ever change, blah, 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 like, and I mean, that almost the fireman hat to me, like, stuff like that to me is a little bit hard for me to watch, because I want it to be serious, so serious all the time, blah, blah, blah. Like, he's a fucking superhero. But, like, I understand that, like, this Spider-Man reboot that they're doing is him being serious but funny, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so they're doing stuff like that. I really didn't like, I mean, like, I giggled a little bit at the hat, but I was the same way. I was like, okay, I mean, like, I don't really think that this adds to his character in the movie. It kind of bugged me too.
Yeah, and so I have three categories that I'm calling my reviews of this movie. There's this is what would be wrong with any movie if it was called anything else, like
Cutthroat Island.
Yeah, Cutthroat Island. Any movie. Like, this is, you both are writers, and I think you would understand this is something that's bad with any story, right?
Yeah.
And then there's a second category, which is like, I'm the guy who has two long boxes full of Spider-Man comics. Now, that might sound like a lot, but Spider-Man was coming out like four times a month.
Sure.
For a year there. So actually, it's not that much.
Yeah.
So there's that category. And then there's what I would call nitpick questions. So I will get first into the broad strokes. And maybe you guys will have understand this. Maybe I don't know.
But... Oh, I would love it if Rachel and I had legitimate answers to your questions. That would be tremendous.
Make a lot of shit up, but go on.
Well, the questions will come in the second category, which is the Spider-Man stuff.
Okay.
But broad stroke problems. What was anyone's, except for Aunt May and Gwen, what was anyone's motivation in this movie? What was Spider-Man's story? What did Spider-Man learn at the end of this film? At the end of this story, what was the point of Spider-Man?
Okay. I'm gonna start off because I'm drunk and I'm saying what I want. I knew the second that Jamie Foxx's character came into the scene that it was going to be the biggest fucking cliche of all time. Mm. I'm like, oh, he does.
Well, when it was the exact same thing as Batman Forever. Like, it's the exact thing that they do for the Riddler in Batman Forever.
Right.
Well, they've done this a couple times, and here's the thing. You can do the, I'm a geek and I'm obsessed with you and now I'm cool. You've done that story. Batman Forever is the example everyone goes to, rightfully so, because this is done just as poorly. Yes. They also did it in Iron Man 3, but that was done pretty, I don't know if it was done well, but it was short. Like,
well, and Robert Downey Jr., so winner.
Yeah, so there's a way to do that story correctly, but Jamie Foxx in this movie, I don't know if anyone is aware of the Bjork stalker from 1992, which is this insane Bjork fan who videotaped himself and then committed suicide. The video's online. You should go see it. but that's who Jamie Foxx was. Jamie Foxx wasn't just a nerd. He was already insane before he became Electro.
Right.
Like, he has a Spider-Man shrine and he bakes a cake and he's like, Spider-Man's my best friend. I'm like, this guy was going to go nuts even if he fell into the electric eel pool.
Right.
He was probably going to bring a gun to work anyway.
But I mean, like, as soon as he came in the scene, I was like, oh, we're going to cliche this shit again.
Right.
And I understand, like, Electro to me was like frightening. Like, I honestly had a nightmare about it when I went to sleep that night. Cause like, that is really scary. Like, when he turns into that guy, he creeps me out in his face. But like,
it's Mr. Freeze face.
Yeah.
Well, just his blue, like, it, but it's just so, like, you're right. It's so cliche and you have to see it obviously coming.
It's not just as cliche. It's like, I really could not tell you what his motivation was other than like, people can't see me, so I'm angry.
Yeah, he was.
Right. That was the other thing. Like, they're trying to make it so important. Like, but with no
buildup.
Spider-Man now on the screen. Like, oh, quit fucking spoon feeding me this. Like, I fucking understand what you're saying.
But by the way, in case you didn't understand, his music in his head will tell you what he's thinking.
Right. Yeah, that part. Did piss me off a lot.
The only thing I liked about the Electro stuff was the special effects. Like, I liked the fights with him, but the whole character
scary. Like, he was frightening.
Well, the whole character stuff doesn't work at all.
So the other thing I have about Electro,
sure,
is he is a person, but he can like dissipate into electricity.
Okay, so now that we're on this, I wanted to bring this up too. So
but he decides to go into a person form to fight Spider-Man when he could just be electricity everywhere and just fucking electrocute the shit out of him.
Okay, so this gets me to my number three category, which is questions. So let's get to my Electro questions.
Sure.
Is Electro
Brown? If you don't notice.
Yeah. Is Electro? That's fine. Is Electro a physical being? Because if he is not, that would explain how I guess he could breathe underwater. Because he's not physical, he's just electric now. But if he's not physical, why can't he be held by handcuffs and things like that? But he seemingly isn't physical because he can move around space through whatever. But therefore, if he's not physical, he shouldn't be able to explode. Electricity doesn't overcharge. Electricity is a thing.
I was also very confused about all of that. I'm like, he can fucking like dissipate into electric. And he can put his entire face on a building and be like, I'm ready for you, Spider-Man. But he can be exploded by, like, two fucking teenagers. I was just like, oh, I'm just gonna, okay.
And since we're on this, I'm sorry. Anyone that shits on Spider-Man 3 and is like, that movie's over the top, I want to pinpoint you to German, evil German scientist.
Oh, this guy.
Yeah, that was
Cameron, this guy.
stupid.
Let's move into in category two. Now, this guy is not a real guy, right? Isn't this a movie character?
I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
Wasn't anything that I was familiar with.
Yeah, I have no idea. I don't know. He was evil German scientist who Oscorp got from the past. I have no idea.
He should have been from like Captain America and have been like a throwback from that first movie.
Isn't it called some Nazis? It's another thing.
So I don't know what the hell. Like, as soon as he was in the prison, I was like, what is this? Like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, and then
and he was like, "Oh, it's time to Nazi bestial." I was like, "Okay, awesome. Push your glasses up somewhere." That's
we have ways of making you talk, Dr. Jones.
Exactly.
Electro has a costume. I don't know where he got it from. I guess they just made one for him.
Also, yeah, and that was like my question too.
Well,
like,
Harry made it, of course.
The rich kid was like, "Oh, here's your bodysuit." Which, if you're electricity, why do you need a body? Oh my god, I have so like. Like, I took physics in college, and I learned about electricity, and, like, nothing that I learned pertained to this movie. It was, like, super annoying to me.
You know who didn't take physics in college?
Oh, Peter Parker, because he has to watch a YouTube video on how batteries work?
Well, that's true, too, but I would say Alex Kurtzman and Roberto Orsi that wrote
They didn't take a fucking class in anything but conspiracy theorists.
Yeah. These guys, how the fuck are these guys getting... I mean, I guess box office, but how are these guys continuing to get all of these big-time films?
Oh, God, who knows? So now, since we're on Electro, let's break down these guys. So, Spider-Man, so like I said... Peter Parker, who in the first film, they make such a big deal out of like, oh, you know, I'm the smartest guy in my class. And Emma Stone's like, well, actually, you're the second smartest. I'm the smartest. So I'm a nerd, too. Peter Parker has to look up on YouTube how a battery works from, I guess, a comedy video.
Yeah, like a joke.
He wasn't looking up how a battery works. He was looking up how to like not overcharge a battery.
Okay, so this is the difference. This is the difference between Peter Parker in... the comics, and I think in my opinion, the Raimi films and Peter Parker in these films, is that in the comics, Peter Parker would have just done it. And someone would have asked him, like, how the hell did you do that? And he would have explained it and been like, oh, it's this, this, and this. Mm. And shown how smart he was. In this movie, and I understand why they did this. They did this so stupid people in the audience can sit there and go, oh. Yes.
That is exactly right. Now, this is one of the things, because I knew that you – I think I either saw you post something about the battery or maybe you had said something to me about it, Cameron. But the first thing that I thought of was I saw this film with an 11-year-old. And the battery part came up, and after the climactic battle with the battery – type thing, he was like, oh, okay. Like, I didn't know what the battery had to do with anything, but then at the end, I understood. And so I was like, oh, well, that's why it's in there. Like, it's not true to character whatsoever.
No.
But it is in there for the audience that may not get it.
And since we're on the battery.
It's spoon feeding the idiots and the kids.
So on that, since we're on the battery, how did the car battery affect the electricity in the entire block?
So many things made me cringe about this.
So those are my Electro points. Let's get on to Harry Osborn and his what he's looking for, what he wants. I guess his motivation is I don't want to die.
Yes.
Which I guess we're supposed to all identify with, because who wants to die?
Sure.
That's universal.
Well, I had like a weird cancerous thing on my neck for like 8.5 years, and so like I'm super worried about it too, so I get it.
Well, here's the thing. This is my favorite thing, is Mark Webb, the director of this movie, has gone on to say like, you know, we put in that whole Norman Osborn thing because we wanted to add a ticking time bomb to this movie. People had to feel like there was urgency to this film. Except I don't understand why Harry Osborn's disease apparently is working 800 times quicker than killing Norman, who died at 60.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and what a waste of Chris.
I don't give a fuck about if that guy dies. Is that my fault?
Yeah.
Oh, but don't worry. They're best friends. They were best friends. They were great friends growing up. My favorite thing is Peter watching the news where Norman Osborn dies, and he goes, Harry. And apparently Norman Osborn dying reminds Peter, like, oh, yeah, I was friends with Harry Osborn. The first film, spending a majority of the first film in Oscorp, he has no idea who Harry Osborn is.
Right.
Okay, but like, I've been drunk a lot, and I don't remember who, like, my friends.
But remember, he's the second smartest guy in his class.
Yeah.
Right.
That is true. I think that, I think that, first of all, it's a waste of Chris Cooper.
Waste of a great actor, who, by the way, I like that they just made him look like the Wicked Witch of the West without, like, the hat.
Yeah, well, he looks like the goblin from the books, and we're really going to shove this purple eyes, green skin thing down your throat. You know, because that's how he was looking as he was dying. I'm like, oh my God, I get the color palette. I get the idea here.
Let me bring this one up.
Sure, sure.
Everyone's big complaint about the first Spider-Man film was like, oh, he looks like a Power Ranger. Looking good guy that looks like a Power Ranger. So it's a good thing we made him look like he fucking had baby diarrhea smeared on his fucking face and like fucking Dragon Ball Z in this retarded movie.
Wow.
Much better.
I don't even know what to say to that. That's what
are you talking about the? Are you talking about Harry?
Yeah.
Yeah, when he's the Green Goblin. Yeah, when he's like Goku.
When he's bad.
He was frightening to me.
Apparently,
why did his hair come to a diagonal point in the middle of his forehead?
Yeah. Why did anything happen? Why did his shoulders extend? Then he's the exact same size. Why did he have an American Werewolf in London transformation? And it's like, oh, he hasn't changed at all. His face is green and he has
jelly. What was that about? It's like he's turned into sort of a spider, but doesn't really have any like spider anything.
Okay, so like I'm also confused about that. Like I don't understand. Like so he was injected with spider venom, correct?
It was radiated spider venom from his dad that has the warehouse on the Roosevelt station thing.
But I'm just really confused about a lot of things in this movie. So from what Peter Parker learned in the secret subway was that his dad put his own DNA in there so the venom wouldn't work for anyone else.
Right.
Except for it fucking worked, technically, for this fucking guy.
It worked because he got into the suit that heals anything.
But I mean, like, it still, right? Like, fucking, like, worked as in it made him different, creepy, goblin-y.
Yeah, right, yeah.
I don't know how to explain it. I mean, like, he was disgusting, obviously. He was gross, and he had, like, teeth that gnashed together and made me want to vomit. But, like, I thought when he said it only works, it means it only makes a difference in the DNA for people in my bloodline.
Oh, so you thought that it would just, nothing would happen.
Right. So, like, he's injected. I'm like, oh, well, good for this fucker. Nothing's going to happen to him. And then all of a sudden it changes. I'm like, that's stupid. I had no understanding for, because I assumed when he was listening to that and smiling and being like, my dad's so smart.
Well, like, okay, let's talk about the dad stuff.
But
hold
I mean,
on.
I
no, 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 hold on.
That was the dad's failsafe. Like, the only people with my DNA can affect this, and then you fucking inject it into somebody and it changes them. Wasn't that his whole point? I'm just saying.
LA. So here's to stick it on Green Goober over here.
Green Booger.
Yeah. Green Booger. So here's some nitpick questions.
Here it is.
Where did he get the pumpkin bombs? If he got the pumpkin bombs, how did he know what they were? How did he know how they worked?
It was a suit. It's like Iron Man. It tells you what to do.
And this is my problem with these series of films, for the most part, is that they just really want you to bring in your own history.
Your own baggage, yeah.
From the last three Raimi movies. Mm. If I could not imagine a little kid watching these two films and feeling that Harry Osborn and Peter Parker have a real friendship and real relationship. But we sitting here are like, and it's the same problem that these two writers did with the Star Trek movies, is that Kirk and Spock in those two Star Trek movies, there's no reason those two should be friends. But we think they're friends. Why? Because their names are fucking Kirk and Spock.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Right? Yeah, but if it was Jimmy and Joe, they wouldn't. Yeah,
you'd be like this creepy weird guy and this weird adventurous guy, but you'd have no history. These movies are completely built on whatever old history you bring from either the comics or the Raimi films.
Hmm. That's a good point. I like that
because if you think about it, like so, this whole thing about like,
oh, well, you know, Harry, I'm here because, you know, you were there for my dad when my parents, when they left. So I want to be here for you.
Okay,
where was Harry during Uncle Ben?
I don't want to undermine you, but when you skip rocks with someone, it's basically like a solid friendship.
Stand by me. If Stand By Me taught us anything. They just had to find a dead body by the boat tracks.
You can talk to someone like heated for years, but if you don't skip rocks with them, then you're obviously not friends.
It's essentially like sharing a shot bottle, right, Cruiser? Like a bottle of Fireball, rocks, it's all
the same. All they had to do was like puncture a beer can with a pencil next to each other. Just chug it down. So here's some other nitpicks. Here's some other nitpicks. And this is in the what universe does this take place in? Because, Cruz, I agree with you that people tend to want to say, like, this is the more realistic Spider-Man. These are grounded. In what universe can I get a meeting with the biggest CEO in New York City by just going, like, I'm so-and-so? I'm their friend.
I'm their friend. I've known him since high school or since elementary school.
Like, there wouldn't be a security guard at the front door going, like, uh-huh, get the fuck out of here.
Or 70 – I mean, like – anyone, like, no, it obviously didn't happen.
And then the whole
For that though, Cameron, I think for something like that, I think that would happen in the comics too, though.
I think it would, and it would be at least maybe shown that, like, Peter Parker got into the building by using his spider powers. And actually, in the comics, you would at least have an understanding that these two were indeed friends and knew each other.
Yeah,
it wasn't like, hey, Harry, I haven't talked to you in 15 years.
What would be good?
Hi,
you, buddy?
We just talked about it.
What would have been so simple is if he would have got kicked out and then he sneaks in somehow being Spider-Man.
Yes.
Would have been a lot easier.
So they're skipping rocks out by, I don't know, by Central Park probably. Yeah, I don't know what. This is the richest young person in New York. And they even, if they didn't make this point, it might have been fine. But they even make a point that, like, oh, Harry, I saw you with all those pictures of those supermodels. So that means paparazzi are after him. So this guy is able to he's basically Justin Bieber, CEO of New York. There's no paparazzi. He has no bodyguards.
He's got
no one around.
He's got the super trimmed beard guy, like, checking him out from about 100 yards away.
Great security. I'm surprised he hasn't been killed.
Well, that's the guy that's, like, spying on him for the bad board guy.
Oh, yeah. And then we have – so I want to go back to the spider blood for a moment. Sure. So his whole thing, Peter – you know, Harry Osborn's whole thing is like, I need the spider blood. I'm going to die super soon. And here's the thing. That's another thing that could have been solved with one simple scene is having a doctor go like, well, Harry, we know this is your bloodline, but it seems to be affecting you sooner than your father. Mm-hmm. Just that. Then we can understand why you're not going to die in 40 years. what's my character motivation? I'm going to die someday.
The special people that are watching this.
That'd have been good. I'm gonna die in 40 years, Peter.
And help me.
Peter, like 85, I'm gonna become a lizard. It's gonna be super awkward for everyone.
Why would you
help me?
So
can you find Spider-Man or at least like Tobey Maguire?
So the whole goal of this movie for Dane DeHaan is I need to get Spider-Man's blood. I think it'll cure me. So he gets it. He doesn't get the blood, but he gets the spider venom. So why the fuck does he go after Spider-Man in the end? Why does he give a shit?
Well,
he got what he wanted. His goal was met. Because he's a dick?
Does he know that it's not the same, or does he think that it's the same thing?
I think they do a pretty clear job of saying it's the exact same kind of shit. I don't think the thing that's missing is like, oh, I need type A negative blood to go with it.
No, because like the only reason he heals is because he has that suit on, is it right?
Yeah, so he gets it, he realizes it doesn't work, and then he, for some reason, is kind of like, fuck you, Spider-Man.
That's kind of what I thought.
So that doesn't make sense
he
at all.
Because he puts the healing suit on, which, like, why wouldn't you just put the healing suit on?
At all times.
The healing suit would be sweet, by the way.
I know, right? Like, I can go out and get wasted.
Werewolf.
I am hung the fuck over. Like, tomorrow morning, I'll have to be like, I need my healing suit, Brad. Brad will be like, suit up.
I need my healing suit. I need to go get Spider-Man.
Yeah, then he'll be like, you'll pay attention to who I am now.
And it's such bullshit, but, like, he's already angry, and I feel like they do that so much. Like, you're angry, and you get a superpower, and so, like, you're not only angry now, you're superpower angry. And you yes. fucking vengeance, blah, 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 Gwen Stacy. And so like everyone hates everybody now. And that's what he did, I feel like. And he just would not comb his hair back or like bobby pins or something. Jesus Christ. But
you didn't like his, Leonardo DiCaprio acts like Keanu
Reeves? It made me so angry. I'm like, how could you even see to tell electricity where to go? Are you kidding?
Yeah. Why did Peter Parker dress up as Spider-Man simply to go to Harry and be like, hey, I'm not going to help you later, dog?
Yeah, that I also didn't understand.
Spider-Man. Okay, hold on. Before I get to Peter Parker, because that's going to be its own thing. This is my problem, is these two villains have zero motivation beyond I'm lonely, I guess, and I'm going to die at some point.
Right. It's like whatever, sad, desperate, psychotic motivation.
Whatever problems you have with the Raimi Spider-Man films, I feel like A, at least they have motivation, and B, they at least, especially with, I think, Dr. Octopus and Spider-Man 2, which is the best Spider-Man movie, they tied it in enough to Spider-Man's own struggle, which is Dr. Octopus is doing something what he thinks is for the greater good. Right? He goes crazy, but his whole goal is to set up this device that he believes will give power to the whole city. He's being selfish for his own need for what he considers the greater good. Spider-Man's whole thing in that movie, that Peter Parker Spider-Man in that movie, is he's going to quit being Spider-Man for his own selfish needs. Is that doesn't he deserve to be happy? Doesn't he deserve to have what he wants? And he has to give up that selfishness and be Spider-Man and take on with greater power comes greater responsibility. And Dr. Octopus in that movie has to give up his own selfish needs and destroy his own weapon himself. Now, that might sound complicated to a bad writer, but it's presented very simply, and it's at least a clear motivation that has better layers than just, I'm super angry.
Right.
Fuck the world and Spider-Man. Because he's
no,
on
I,
TV.
I mean, I have to agree with that. I just want to punch Tobey Maguire in the face.
Well, here's the thing is that to me, so I'll get into Peter Parker now. Eric, I know you wanted to get to the parents, and I definitely need to get to the parents because I have questions about Richard Dumb Parker.
Well, he has parents? I must have slept for that.
Oh, well, you didn't? You missed the first 15 minutes of the movie that should have been about young Harry and young Peter?
Wrong. I was there a half an hour early, as per usual.
Wrong, she says.
So the thing – and I do understand what people talk about the Raimi films. I don't agree, but I understand. And the thing about it is like I think – you know, if Sam Raimi was making what we're – and I mean you said – Rachel's that, you know, you don't really know the comics, and that's fine. I don't think that should be a hindrance, but Raimi was making what was essentially the 60s and 70s Peter Parker. And that is within the tone of the comics he was reading when he was a kid.
That makes sense. Who would not want to make a movie about the comics you grew up with?
Yeah. Whereas in the 80s and the, you know, movies that are being made now are made by people who grew up, you know, probably, in my opinion, either not reading Spider-Man at all or grew up in the 80s when Spider-Man was like,
so
tougher.
It sounds like to me that you are mad about people that go to see Spider-Man movies and have not read the comics.
No, that's not it. I feel you
there
can change.
There is a shallow note of disdain in your voice.
What I will say, you can change a character in certain ways, as long as there's still something there that made that character.
I really appreciate that. I do.
You know, and I mean, like, I love the Tim Burton Batman movies. Batman kills people in those movies, like, without care. But
in the comics, does Batman kill people?
Never. He is so, like, it's much more like the Christopher Nolan movies. He's so anti-gun and anti-everything, whereas
he's like my favorite person.
Yeah. But in the Tim Burton movies, you know, he straps a bomb to a fat guy and throws him down a, like, chute just to blow him up.
Yeah, but Tim Burton was like, crash, pow, bang, boom.
Oh, no, I agree. But my point being is...
And I like those anyway.
Oh, no, but that's my point is I like those movies. There's still a lot of what is Batman in those films.
Mm-hmm.
My problem with these movies is I feel like they get Spider-Man right. They get the jokey, quippy, fast-moving guy.
Is that how he is in the comics? Is he like smartassy?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, he's not like Iron Man smartassy, but
Debatably, he's the biggest smartass in Marvel.
Yeah, until, he makes
until
more,
those movies. Until
it's
the
more
Iron
of
Man
like movies. Punny kind of stuff. I always like, feel like there's a lot of puns.
In the comics, so like, he irritates the shit out of the rest of the Avengers, especially Wolverine.
Yes.
Good, because Wolverine's a bitch.
So they get that completely 100% right, is who is Spider-Man. My problem is then when it gets to Peter Parker. In the comics, there's this thing called so this is my second category, which is the Peter Parker, the Spider-Man, I'm the guy with two long boxes of comics.
Sure.
Is that in the comics, Peter Parker has this thing called the Parker luck.
Parker luck, yeah.
And what the Parker luck is and that's what the Raimi Spider-Man 2 is all about, is like having the great power of responsibility and being Spider-Man, he misses out on everything. He's constantly late to things. He can't be relied upon, but he can't tell the people that he's closest to in his life why he's unreliable. He has to make up. He has to make up excuses because he can't tell them that he's Spider-Man. He has to say to them like, oh, I missed the train. I missed this. This happened, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole thing about Peter Parker, is that Peter Parker, even though he is, yes, a superhero, and yes, he is Marvel's biggest superhero, just because he has superpowers, it has fixed nothing in his life. He is still super broke. He has to struggle job to job. He's late to things. He disappoints people. He's still a human being.
He has a lot of girl problems still.
He has a lot of girl problems. And that was in the 60s what made Spider-Man such a big deal and such a big character.
Because he was so human on the outside.
He was so human, whereas like at that time when comics, Batman, Superman, and all those guys, you could never be them. Like,
well, they're rich fuckers.
Yeah, they're rich fuckers. They're grown ass men.
But even in the Marvel comics at that time, like the Fantastic Four, though they had like they were family and they fought with each other. At the same time, you're like, well, I'm not as smart as Reed Richards, and I'm not as lucky as Johnny Storm, right. And I'm not this, and I'm not, and blah 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 blah. Well, Peter Parker and the whole people have made. Written great articles about the reason Peter Parker or Spider-Man, not Peter Parker, Spider-Man works with the mask that covers his entire face is you can see yourself in that character. Mm-hmm. And you understand that I have bad luck. I don't communicate well with others. Maybe I'm socially awkward. Maybe I'm this, maybe I'm that. These movies have Peter Parker swing into graduation, dip the girl, kiss her, give someone a high five and look to the crowd and go, yeah.
Oh, so that's why you're angry. It's not
consistent.
No, I totally get it. Like but as someone who's never read the comics, like I feel like I bring like a super ignorant American point of view to your film podcast. Just saying, because I haven't read the comics, I haven't been a fan of them. So, like, what I want Spider-Man to be. As an ignorant American is witty, wisecracking, but also like at the very last minute gets his shit together.
Well, that's the thing. It's like you gotta think in the Raimi films. You just said it right there. At the last minute, things do work out for him. Usually, he does get the girl. He's able to be Spider-Man and balance his normal life. In these movies, everything is fine from minute one. Like. So and I think this is what I'm talking about, where it's like these are writers who I think they get Spider-Man, but they look at Peter Parker. Maybe not the writers. It's maybe not fair. Here's the thing, and no one talks about this. The people who made – and this is true. You can read all about it on the internet. The people who made Sam Raimi put Venom in Spider-Man 3, who put the black suit in Spider-Man 3, who – and this is quoted – told Sam Raimi – Sam, you need to stop being so selfish. You got to give the fans Venom. They love Venom. Those people still control these movies.
Hmm.
And make these movies and have say over what happens in these movies. These people, it's A.B. Arad, that's his name, I'm not going to hide it, has done an interview where he says, I don't see the point in bringing in Miles Morales into the Spider-Man universe. It should always be Peter Parker. For those who don't know, Miles Morales is a black Hispanic boy who was turned into Spider-Man in the Ultimate Universe. That character was created to make a more universal Spider-Man that people who were not white, middle-class New Yorkers could identify with. Mm-hmm. This is the person in charge of Spider-Man right now.
Was he replacing Spider-Man or were there two Spider-Men?
Yeah, Peter Parker died.
It's like a whole complicated like alternate universe kind of a thing. where and, Peter was young again. And
well, it's fucking 2014, so can we not do that? Because I feel like that would be okay. Because it's fucking 2014, by the way.
Yeah, so...
if you guys didn't know.
He doesn't see the point in having... Hispanic
people can do anything they want.
Oh, not according to AVR, Rod. So this is my thing, is though. So, okay, so then let's say, hey, everything works out for Peter Parker in these films. So these are my fundamental problems with these movies, is that a whole thing of Spider-Man is Uncle Ben is the great power, great responsibility. It's that he feels – and you don't have to read the comics. These are in the Raimi films, and these are in every other incarnation of Spider-Man, from the comics, the cartoons,
great
to the movies.
Great power, great responsibility. Got you.
Mm-hmm. Great power, great responsibility, but it's also the fact that I did not stop the person that killed Uncle Ben, and I could have. And that's why there is the great power, great responsibility. In these films, it is, Uncle Ben, leave me alone. And then Uncle Ben doesn't listen. Uncle Ben goes looking for Peter, and Uncle Ben gets shot. Man, if only Uncle Ben had left Peter alone. This ain't Peter's fault. Believe me, it's not Peter's fault. Uncle Ben should have left him alone. And then in these movies...
I don't feel that way. I feel like he was an asshole to his uncle, and he felt bad about being a dick. And he still feels bad.
Well, let me say this too. And then it especially works out in the end, because Gwen Stacy in the comics is all about – they usually have to, in comics, recycle the hero's modus operandi. You know what I mean? Like his thing. That's why they killed, you know, Jason Todd in the Batman comics. I mean, people voted for it. But it's to make sure that people aren't just like, oh, my God, Bruce Wayne, your parents died how many years ago? Get over it. Is that people continuously die around this person. So it's like you never forget why you're doing what you're doing. And that's just continuous storytelling. So in the comics, Gwen Stacy dies, and then again, it comes down to Peter being like, oh my God, I wasn't there in time, I wasn't fast enough, great power comes great responsibility. In these movies, Gwen, you gotta get out of here. Peter, I'm not leaving. Gwen, you need to go. No, Peter, I'm staying. Well, I guess it was her fault.
No, I don't feel like that. I feel like, and this is from a woman's point of view, I feel like it's 2014, and they wanted to have a powerful female character.
I think they did to a degree. I think they did.
To a degree, yes. Because...
why didn't she punch Harry in his stupid fucking face when they were flying around?
Fuck that motherfucker. But,
oh, because he had diarrhea on his face. That's why. She didn't want to touch him.
Right. She probably would have got, like, goblin herpes or something. But, like, I'm okay with this because I obviously am female and I love... I mean, like... first of all, I love punching people in the face. And I also love, I'm just saying, like, somebody pisses me off. Like, that's what's going to happen. But I obviously love like, strong female people. And so, obviously, I haven't read the comics, but in the 60s, I'm assuming that the female characters in Spider-Man weren't exactly the take charge kind of women.
Oh, no. And I 100% agree. And I think Gwen was a strong character, but I also feel like these are the writers trying to make sure this is a $250 million movie. We can't have anyone doubt the main character. Make sure he's blameless.
Okay.
He's super cool. Everything works out for him. He's funny. He's snarky. He's smart.
I don't
blameless.
Really, I mean, like, and I don't obviously don't agree with that because like, and I would think that Eric would agree with me on this. Like, I kind of like gritty, faultful lead characters. Like, mm-hmm. I like lead characters that aren't perfect, that have some fuck ups along the way that you still can identify with to a point, but they have fucked up and you almost identify with them more because they're not perfect and they're not blameless. And so I feel like you're right about this movie where like, he does seem semi-blameless because he warned her, you know, like, stay away. And she's like, no, I'm a woman, blah, 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 I do what I want. And I'm super smart, I'm going to Oxford, which I'm not, okay, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Or I'm not even going to get into that. But, like, I wanted him to be more at fault for that. Like, I wanted him to be like, I need your help. And then he was like, even more guilty when she died.
Well, that's, and this is the other point that's interesting. I've talked to a lot of people about this, and I want to see what you two think. Did she hit her head and therefore webbing her wouldn't have mattered, or did he catch her in time and broke her neck? And
well, it's clearly intentionally meant to be ambiguous,
which is a huge problem.
It's, well, I don't understand why
it's point to like splat against the floor.
I'm not saying she needs the splat, but it needs to be, because it needs, I think it needs to be.
It needs to be Peter's fault.
It needs to be Peter's fault, not like, because again, like, I've talked to a bunch of people. Half people are like, oh no, she hit her head. It wouldn't have mattered anyway. Those people are going to keep going forward again, thinking like, hey man, Spider-Man ain't to blame. It ain't his fault.
You know,
how is it not his fault?
Because he told her to stay away and she chose to be there.
Because it's not his fault. It's not his fault because her head hit the ground anyway. Web her, not web her.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So he was trying to get her, but he couldn't get her.
30 seconds earlier, she would have never hit her head on the ground.
But the idea is that he did get her in time, and the force of him webbing her broke her neck.
In the comics.
In the comics.
So therefore, having it both ways makes it ambiguous.
But she would have splatted against the ground if he didn't web her?
Sure. Well, in the books, it's over a river. It's over a river, so it doesn't. I mean, it's the same sort of idea, but. You know, it's basically to where he feels like he's responsible for it.
And I think that
adds on to that responsibility. And one of the things that I do like, because I feel like we are being harsh on the film that I didn't necessarily
we'll come back.
I'm not that negative about, but I really wanted to butt in and say that I liked the Captain Stacy stuff quite a bit.
Oh, you did!
I liked it because I thought that held him. He had that that cloud of responsibility that he didn't necessarily have with Uncle Ben, where okay. he walked around feeling like I shouldn't be doing this. I shouldn't be here. I should know better. I should leave her alone, and I should let her live her own life.
Kind of pissed me off though. Like
I would agree that. Captain Stacy replaced Uncle Ben because they did a terrible Uncle Ben job in the first film. So therefore, he is the new Uncle Ben. Here's the problem with the whole Captain Stacy thing. Is then you get to this is why these movies are so fucking weird, especially near the end. So we have this whole thing in the first film about like, because, you know, they really want people to leave these movies going like, woo, triumphant, party down, all right. So the first movie ends with like, Peter, stay away from Gwen. You gotta promise me. These are my dying words. Not tell my wife I love her. Stay away from Gwen. And then the end of the movie is like, some promises aren't worth keeping. Credits. So you're sitting there going like, yeah, Spider-Man, get that girl. Don't worry about it. Fuck that dead guy.
He's trying to get in them guts like, fuck her dad.
So then this movie is all about like the ghost of Captain Stacy watching, being like, remember what you promised me, Peter. And then the end of the movie, well, I guess Gwen's dead. He doesn't have to worry about ghosts anymore. All right, let's go fight the Rhino. Woo! Credits.
That also pissed me off so bad. Like, I thought...
remember when Paul Giamatti was nominated for Best Actor?
Yeah, what the fuck is that about?
Best Actor in what?
Cinderella Man. Actually, supporting actor. But wasn't he nominated for American Splendor?
Sure. I don't know if it was like a Golden Globe or if... what it was, but
if you're going to kill off Gwen Stacy in the new Spider-Man movies, why would you not use it as an entire story arc in the next movie?
Because they got to bring it up to the Sinister Six.
Sew it up at the end of this movie.
Yeah, it should be it definitely should be a he couldn't stop Harry. Gwen's dead. The next movie is him trying to get Harry.
Because they so sold it on this movie. I get it. You're with her with the seasons. Like, you can't go on with your fucking life. Like, the next movie should be the beginning of him just, like, letting everything fall the fuck apart because he can't even handle himself. Why did they wrap it up so nicely in a fucking bow?
I think it's exactly what Cameron said. Is they want you leaving and telling people, oh, it was a great time. It was blah, blah, blah. They don't want you leaving going,
it was man,
that was a fucking drag. You know?
Which is so weird.
That's bullshit, though. That's so bullshit.
That's
openly wanted to copy the Dark Knight films. They said so even when they were making these. I don't give a shit what anyone says now. The Dark Knight ends on a pretty somber tone. I was like, the cops are after him.
Yeah. They're definitely that is a marketing and a masses kind of move. It's a what's good for the brand Spider-Man. It's we'll end it on a positive fighting note with some cool special effects.
That's stupid.
Not going to end it in a artistic way. In a you know, in a way that would make sense story-wise. We're going to end it in a way that's bubblegum and soda, kind of.
I think it's that they truly – look, I know I'm being harsh. I don't care. They truly don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. They look at what's successful right now, and they're like, what's successful? Batman and Twilight. So let's get a guy that kind of looks like Robert Pattinson, make him Spider-Man, but we'll have a dark, somber tone.
Okay,
like,
but seriously,
the Dark Knight movies.
Batman never ends, like, super great. Like, oh, everyone's fucking sunshine and rainbows and Batman.
Oh, no, I know that.
You know but why? Do you know what's wrong with Spider-Man? No rainbows. Christopher Nolan.
That's true. No Christopher Nolan, that's true.
Well, I think so. It's like
I need to write so many letters.
That's right.
But this is
gonna have a long
like,
meeting with
dear
him.
Dear Christopher Nolan, this is going to be 37 pages, but seriously, stick with me.
Please help Spider-Man.
Please help Spider-Man not be such a fucking whiny ass bitch pussy, smart ass, get over my girlfriend in a literally 5 minutes movie. I love you, Christopher Nolan.
So let me, that was beautiful.
Very large to be 36.
Let's also discuss this one. So this is what I'm talking about when I say they don't know what they're doing. And that sounds super harsh. Let me say also, I think this movie looks really good. Mark Webb made a very good looking movie. It's shot on film.
I really love the, fly scenes through the city where they did the slow motion. It was like, oh shit, this is amazing. Well,
that was very good. And it's shot on film, so it looks really good, too. Which, yes. I mean, a lot of big movies are not being shot on film anymore.
Right, but your mom is, so that's really great.
Nope, not happening. So here's what I mean when I say they don't know what they're doing. Did you guys know they filmed a bunch of Mary Jane scenes?
Yeah, I did know that they got cut out.
With a fairly well-known actress. What's her name? Shailene Woodley?
From Divergent, right?
Yeah, that bitch.
Those are gone. In the trailers, the whole thing about the trailers is like, Peter, Oscorp is watching you. Did you know that? Why are they watching me? That's all gone. All that's gone. Which makes me think, like, you can excise an entire subplot, a plot of the movie. It's just,
well,
get it out of there.
It's like, for me, it all boils down to the screenwriting. And of course it does, being who the three of us are. But it's about... What the hell? Did they think the film was going to be 4 hours? Like, how the hell could they have got all of this into one film and made it make any kind of sense whatsoever? Because as we've displayed, and as Cameron is sort of making me come around on, it makes very little sense in the form that it's in, let alone the parts that are cut and the parts that we haven't talked about yet.
And
so,
the next film in the set, again, with they don't know what they're doing, the next film in the set is not Spider-Man 3. The next film... is Sinister Six.
The Sinister Six, right.
Which comes out...
What the fuck is Sinister Six?
It's all of the villains.
It's a villain team-up movie. It's Dr. Octopus and the Green Goblin and Rhino and Kraven the Hunter and other people.
So most of the people that he was walking by, the mysterious guy with the hat that he's walking by, and you see the octopus deal...
So they're doing...
Vulture.
But isn't Spider-Man Marvel?
Yeah.
Yes.
So he's not in the Avengers?
No, it's a whole
it's a
legal,
different studio.
Yeah,
it's,
legal
it's,
thing.
It's a silly mumbo jumbo thing. But here's the thing.
Spider-Man's too poor to be in Avengers.
Yep.
Yeah, that's basically right.
It's basically like we're doing white trash version of Avengers, and it's called what is it called?
It's called Sinister Six. They're bad guys. They're not
but
heroes.
Spider-Man's not in it.
Yes, yeah, no Spider-Man.
Who's
so that's
that?
Gonna be the. That's going to be the next film, and then Spider-Man 3. So I'm like, do you know what you're doing? Do you know what you're doing? like film by film, it's like, oh, my God. So let's get into this. Rachel, I'd love to hear your take on this. I think Peter Parker is a human monster of a boyfriend. Let us ignore for the fact that he kills her. Let's ignore that for a moment. Or does he? Who knows?
Kill her.
So let's ignore that for a moment. So the first film... He doesn't go to her father's funeral because he made a promise, but he's going to break that promise in 2 minutes on screen, so don't worry about it. But he still refuses to go to her father's funeral, so she has no one there to like be with but her family. So her boyfriend is not there. He has a mental breakdown, I need to break up with you, but you should break up with me, on the day of their graduation.
But he swooped in and kissed her.
He's constantly going to her work to give her like, oh, this is what's going on. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how I feel. The day of her big presentation to Oxford, he goes in and is like, what am I going to do about Harry? And I'm Spider-Man, and Harry's my best buddy, and oh, Gwen. So, you know, that's good, because that's all the stuff she wants in her head before her big presentation. And then he sweeps her up out of the taxi, and then she dies.
Yes.
This is an emotional human monster.
Yeah, Gwen's got a rough road.
The thing about it is... Shit.
For me, it wouldn't be as egregious if it wasn't Emma Stone and if she doesn't save it.
If this was not Peter Parker, if this movie was the Gwen Stacy story and this was the boyfriend, we would all be watching this going like, get away from him!
he's a monster! Emma Stone and Andrew Garfield together are adorable.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me want to just hug them both, like, by myself. However, I understand why you're telling me that this is fucking ridiculous, because, like, you're telling me this because in real fucking life, if this happened, like, a boyfriend's, like, I'm breaking up with you, I'm coming to your fucking interview, like, normal...
I see your father's a ghost.
Normal women would be like, hey, remember when I told you to fuck off, like, a long time ago? Like, I'm not kidding.
That meant fuck off.
But, like, this is the movie where, like, they're planting seeds, quote-unquote, where they're destined to be together. And so she's going to Oxford. This is super important. But he comes in and interrupts her. But she knows that he's super important to her life and heart, too. And so when she dies, it's, like, even worse because she loved him so much that she interviewed her or intervened on her Oxford interview or whatever. And, like, I would have been like, Brad, fuck off. Like, I fucking told you 72 times that I'm trying to be, like, interviewed for this. So, like, go, like, fuck you. So
my favorite scene is when she says, like, don't worry, I looked at the schematics. I know how this works. And then there's a button that says reset.
Yes, now that's insulting. Okay. Because.
But, I mean, I'm just saying, like, like, I know why they did what they did in the movie, because it's so fucking spoon-fed. It's so spoon-fed, and that's what makes me so mad about this movie, is, like, I want you to feel these emotions about these people, because we are obviously going to interrupt these emotions with something awful, and we want you to feel X emotion about what we just did. And it's so cliche, and it's so set up.
Well, this feels like a movie where it's almost like in the writing process, they were all sitting in a room and going, hey, why does this happen? And I feel like the two words that were said constantly during the writing is, just cause.
Moves the plot along, fucker.
Just, why does this happen? Just cause.
Because I said so, because I fucking just wrote it, and I'm drinking alcohol.
It just seems like everyone has, you know, ADHD, to where no one bothers to think about the film as a whole. They just think about... Here's my scene that I'm working on, and I'm going to make this scene fine. Now, how it fits to the overall film, fuck all that. I don't care. I'm just worried about
like
this.
Darth and a dartboard, and then just, like, lacing them together. I understand that.
And I think that tends to be my fundamental problem, is, like, whatever problems people have with the Raimi films, I get it. At least, like, tonally, they were the same tone throughout. And whether you like that tone or you don't like that tone.
I hate it so much.
It's the same with, like, the Nolan Batman films, all those films. There is a consistent tone. This movie jumps between Batman Forever to a romantic mumblecore movie to a conspiracy film to a teenage drama to mopey, I'm going to sit on a park bench film. Like, it jumps all over the place. It doesn't know what it wants to be, so it wants to be everything to everybody. Because eventually something's going to happen in the movie that anyone can say, oh, I like that part.
Sure.
I really would have loved if it was a conspiracy film. Mystery film. Because they had the whole, like, secret story about the parents. And, like, he goes to the secret subway, blah, blah, blah. Like, we have all of that fucking shit. But, like, I feel like, he learns it and it, like, never pans out. Like, I like, want him to be like, oh, because, like, we're doing, like, mystery things. Like, oh, I want this.
And that's where my first question comes in, which is, like, what is Peter Parker's story in this film? What's his lesson? Is to find out the truth about his father? That kind of comes and goes. Gwen That also kind of comes and goes. Look out for Max Dillon. Is it being friends with Harry? What's up with Oscorp? This has no, I'm really not being facetious here. I could not tell you what the through line of this movie is, other than Spider-Man for a couple months and shit happens.
They could have done if they would have done something to where he is just even being like stressed or just having a problem dealing with all of these different stories. Like if they would have had just a few scenes of, I'm being completely overwhelmed by all of this shit that's going on, whether that's a meta commentary or not. Like if he's talking to Aunt May, just like, I got a lot on my mind, but you know, something.
And I thought when she had her little breakdown and was like, you're my boy.
Yeah.
I thought that was going to happen. He's like, oh, you're my girl. But like he kept it together.
I told you, I need to know the truth, Aunt May.
But I wanted him to like break the fuck down. Like,
yeah, it would have made more sense if he was just so stressed and just didn't know how to handle anything.
She's so vulnerable with him, but he can't be vulnerable with her? Are you fucking kidding me?
His girlfriend that he breaks up with and sort of dates and...
No, he's telling her, you're my mom, you're my person. And he just kisses her on the forehead and is like, I'll take care of you. No, seriously, you can wash your nurse shirts whenever you want. Like, fuck!
He ain't got time for that. Peter Parker's a cool dude.
No.
So it's like, I think that the thing about it is like, what it comes down to for me too is that it's, the tone's all over the place. You also have, and this is what Kurtzman and Orsi do. Everything is, there's an evil empire, mm-hmm. and you're the chosen one. And that's what they've done with the Star Trek movies, Transformers, Mission Impossible 3. It's all the same. And that is so fundamentally not Peter Parker at all. Again, it comes down to anyone can imagine their Peter Parker, but because with Richard Parker stuff of like, only my son could have been Peter Parker. I'm like, okay, so apparently Peter's the chosen one now.
Not because he says only my DNA works, but his DNA obviously worked on the Green Goblin.
Well, made him a goopy monkey man.
But it's still...
Yeah, it didn't work the same way, but it still did something.
But yes, it still did something.
Sure, but it's still the point. It did something terrible.
I'm still saying, though, like, you can't, like, Harry Potter this, where he's, like, the chosen one, because obviously the venom works on some people, and granted it works differently than... Yeah, the Harry, way that Harry, they, it was intended to work, but it, he's not the chosen one at all.
Yeah, Harry's Neville Longbottom.
No, Harry.
He's the other kid whose parents died.
Stop. No. where the fuck?
But the point being is that like Peter. Okay, so maybe Peter's not the only one that would have gotten powers, but Peter's the only one who would have been Spider-Man.
True.
Is that other people might have gotten powers, but they would have gotten like diarrhea face and Goku hair. Right. So only his DNA would have been the right DNA. And that the fact that everything comes from Oscorp, like we see it in the end where the guy with the hat walks through and there's the octopus tentacles and the vulture's wings. Everything is going to come from Oscorp. So it is like, really? Everything? Like everything comes from this one place? There's no randomness in this universe. Harry killed Gwen. It's his friend from when he was a child. All this is happening because of his father's conspiracy plans and people are after me, Peter. And this whole thing, nothing random happens in this universe. Everything is completely predetermined. And that's Kurtzman and Orsi. That's what they do. Their films are, I want to have this scene, this scene, this scene. How can we get there? Well, write these scenes in between. There's no – things don't happen because character dictates that that's what needs to happen. Hmm. These are things that are predetermined by the script that they should happen, so they're just going to happen.
You know, like, what was funny, Cameron, is I didn't know that they wrote the film, right, going into it.
How could you not? There's magic blood.
And then I get to the end and I go, oh, okay, that makes sense.
I like how they took the opposite approach, is that in Star Trek, magic blood brings Kirk back to life. In this film, magic blood turns Harry into an evil villain.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're like, well, we went left down this
road. But it wasn't magic blood. It was blood that he wasn't supposed to have in the first place.
Yeah.
So let's
talk about how he gets the blood and the Roosevelt and about how.
Okay, so this gets into my nitpick question.
The dad doesn't give a shit that his wife dies, but he's got to upload this video of his son, of him talking for a minute.
He does give a shit, but he knows that like this is his last thing that he can do to help anyone before they all she's obviously dead.
But who does it help though?
It helps Peter Parker.
So here's some of my nitpick questions. Let's jump into this. I'm excited. How did Richard Parker get a private plane? Is it a private plane? Is it his? Or is it an Oscorp plane? If it's an Oscorp plane, why did he get on it? If it's a private plane, who is that assassin?
Well, first of all, I think it's Eric's mom's plane.
It is my mom's plane.
She has private planes everywhere because she's like the ultimate prostitute. So she has planes that go everywhere.
She's also going to kill Cruz when she listens to this, but it's another thing. She's a super villain.
It's honestly not that hard to charter a private plane. Like,
but if they can afford a charter plane, why not leave some of that money for, I don't know, the kid you just abandoned?
They didn't have time to.
They're not worried about that. They left him with capable people.
They know that the Aunt May, even though she at times seems like, you know, it seems like she's on the brink of, you know what, we didn't really fucking want you.
You were dropped in our laps.
Yeah.
He had a child named Forrest Gump, and I raised him, and he was super rich, but, like, I chose this life.
She very much seems to be on the brink of saying, you know, we didn't choose this life. Like, your parents did this to us. So how dare you not appreciate what we've done for you?
So Aunt May says she's going to nursing school to earn extra money. I didn't realize school gave you money. If you're in a desperate situation, why are you going to an expensive school?
Yeah, that part, that whole thing is ridiculous. When she's in the hospital for no reason, she's supposed to be sort of like a little leader of like a triage.
I agree with that. That was unnecessary.
Yeah, it's like she couldn't just be like hanging out at home. Like, no one gave a shit about anything about the hospital at all.
Well, or what Aunt May was doing, like, nobody, I mean, like, people like Aunt May, but, like, nobody cares that she was,
yeah,
like,
that didn't need to be in there whatsoever.
Team leader.
I would almost guarantee you that is in there because there was supposed to be a Gwen in the hospital at the end of the movie scene. Why else would you show Aunt May in the hospital when the power goes out?
Yeah, it could be a deal where she's having to take care of Gwen, and then the power goes out.
Sorry, Peter, yeah.
And she's trying to save her, you know, sort of son's girlfriend, and the power goes out.
Really? Isn't Richard Parker a geneticist? How did he create a hydraulic train?
Yeah, and hide it, and that whole thing, it's like, what? So he spent how many years going to this place?
And money.
And how much money? And he has no supervision whatsoever. And the city doesn't give a shit that he's down there. And he's apparently a genius, like, at manufacturing everything and constructing all of this shit.
This movie reminded me of, like, remember in the 90s, like the late 80s and the 90s, when computers could literally do anything in movies by people who didn't know what computers could do? It's like, the computer can change the weather. I feel like this is that kind of movie where it's like, he's a scientist. He can do stuff.
Yeah. Right, like, I wanted him to go to the estranged subway, and I wanted him to find something that he could plug into a computer and hear the video. I didn't want a giant fucking subway to come out of nowhere.
I felt like I was watching the Polar Express when that.
Right, it has computers that just turn on.
Hot chocolate.
Yeah, everything turns on and everything's, you know, working fine, whatever. And then, you know, that's all fine and well, but if they would have done something with the video, I see the video and I'm like, this is your main upload? Like, this doesn't do anything for me. Like,
that was the best take they had. I'm Richard Parker, my son.
You know what? I usually like Campbell Scott too, but.
I do too.
I was like, wow, this is not. Like, was this your line reading before you realized they said action or what? What's going on?
My next question, Richard Parker's hideout can be found on Google. What if a Roosevelt enthusiast comes to New York?
Yeah, that was strange. It's like Peter and the computer, he's very smart. He goes to a science school, but he's very not tech savvy at times. But then he can make the web shooters, which I was surprised that they never had any problems with him like running out of shit like they do in the comics.
Considering how big of a deal they made out of the fact that they had the non-organic original comic web shooters, they have done nothing with those in these two movies.
Well, they magnetized them, which Gwen had to teach him about.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's such a fine line of making her seem capable and smart, but then you don't want your main character, who's a salutatorian, to be come across as stupid. And
it's just so hard because, like, it all has to do with, like, the femininity. Like, oh, God, we can't make Gwen Stacy be the damsel in distress anymore like we used to do. Or I don't know. I'm assuming that they used to do.
No, you're correct.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's 2014, so if we come out with a movie where the heroine is fucking an idiot and needs to be rescued, then, oh, God forbid that. And I'm on board with it, but like, not for this stuff. For like, if you want to stay true to the comics, then just stay true to the comics.
So. Well, there's a way to do both, though. There's a way to have it be like Gwen is helping Peter without making Peter look either dumb or incompetent.
She makes him look dumb in this movie. Yeah. And I'm okay with that because I love Emma Stone. And I honestly feel like if we did like a smart contest, Emma Stone would beat Andrew Garfield. But, I like 2014, I'm okay with this. Like, she's smarter than him, obviously, but in the comics, if you want to stay true to those, I'm assuming since it was the 50s and people thought that women were only good for cooking and cleaning, that she probably didn't.
And saving.
Yeah, whatever. She probably didn't come off as smarter than he was.
No, but like I'm saying, like, there's a way to have her be smart and not make Peter look dumb. He could be less smart, you know what I mean? Like, and not just look like he's going like, oh, okay, yeah, all right, I forgot.
Yeah.
I forgot
how to... Glad you're here.
I forgot how to walk. So my last, this is my last big question. This gets to a fundamental thing with these films. So after Gwen died, Peter was totally fired from the Bugle, right?
No way.
Because for 5 months, he clearly wasn't being Spider-Man. They make a point that he's been gone for 5 months. So he wasn't taking Spider-Man photos.
He was taking Ansel Adams photos, black and white, in the park when he's in the graveyard.
Of Gwen's grave and sending them into the Bugle. So I'm assuming he got fired. So therefore, he's now just bumming out at home, sucking off Aunt May's money that she's trying to get to nursing school. What a great guy. What a hero. He's the hero we deserve.
He, like you said, this would all be stuff that, like Rachel had said, would be wonderful for the next film when his life is shit. He started out with a shitty life, like, and he has to build it back.
In a way, they had to put that into like the last literally 7 minutes of the film. They should have started the next movie with like him being like impossible to make into a person again.
Yeah, and I think like, and this is my thing with this, is that like, I don't know who this Peter Parker is beyond, you know, broad strokes. He's kind of cool and kind of smart and he's people's friends, but does he go to school? They say he has a job. I never see him with a camera in this movie, I don't think. Does he have friends?
Yeah, he just says that he took a photo, but you don't see him.
All he does, as far as I can tell, from the language of what this film is telling me, he's basically Spider-Man and stalks Gwen.
Right. Yeah, because
Does he have friends? Does he have anybody? Does he do stuff? Does he just like... Like, I was thinking about it in comparison to the Raimi films, and I think one of my favorite scenes in all three Raimi films put together, it's a very simple scene, and I think this shows the artisticness of simple, small scenes, it's in Spider-Man 2, it's after he's had the falling out with Mary Jane and Harry, and his aunt finds out that he could have done something for Uncle Ben. He's at the lowest he's going to be, and the Russian neighbor comes over and offers him cookies and milk. It's a silly scene I'm sure people laugh at, but it's a very simple idea that shows there's other people in this world. There's other people that care about Peter Parker that are not just the three individuals who are constantly running into. It shows Peter Parker's life outside of being Spider-Man and outside of the normal stuff we would see. It's a very simple scene, but it speaks volumes. This movie, these two movies, have nothing like that because the writers and the people making them don't give a shit about Peter Parker. They want to make a cool 90s skateboarding dude with nice hair who's sarcastic and nothing really goes wrong. And the bad things that happen in his life aren't really his fault.
Let me ask you this. Now, this is doing poorly. This will be the lowest earner of the Spider-Man films, of the five.
And that's including 3D ticket prices and everything else,
also
too.
Also Tobey Maguire.
So this is doing poor. What do you think that is, Cameron? Like, why is it that you think people, you know, had a problem with them rebooting it so quickly after the first three? Or do you feel like that even though you would think this is more popcorn and soda spoon feeding it to the idiot masses, you would think that this would be a better formula than an auteur sort of a formula.
I think at the end of the day, I think there's two folds. I think they would have been better off not necessarily doing Spider-Man 4, but doing the James Bond thing. It's just like, here's another Spider-Man adventure.
And not worrying about it. Just here's Andrew Garfield, he's Spider-Man, whatever.
Yeah, here's Andrew Garfield, he's Spider-Man, Emma Stone, they're in college. Fine. You know, just go. You know what I mean? Bring back J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson. Keep some stuff from the old Spider-Man movies. You know what I mean? The problem, like they've said, the reason they haven't done J. Jonah Jameson is they're like, oh, we can't find anyone better than J.K. Simmons. And I'm like, why don't you try? Just try. Like, that's the thing. Like, I will always give credits to the Nolan films and other films. That reboot series is they try. Like, how much shit did people talk about Heath Ledger before that Batman film came out?
Oh, yeah. It was going to be terrible, they said.
Can't beat Jack Nicholson. Why are you even bothering? And then look what happened. I'm like, just try. Try to find somebody. But they're not – so they're not doing certain things because it's like, well, it already got done. And they're not doing certain things because they just want us to bring in our own history from the old Spider-Man films about Harry and Peter and the pumpkin bombs and all this other stuff to be like, well, you know, they're friends. We know that. We've seen three other movies. They're friends. We're fine. So they reboot certain things. They don't go near certain things. And that's the first film, I think, fundamentally.
Sure.
I think people just didn't want to see it again. And then I think with this film, I think because it's like – even people that like it, I don't hear anyone being enthusiastic.
Right. And that's
I mostly hear people kind of going like, yeah.
Yeah, that's the camp that I would fall in. Like I like it more than I dislike it. I think this talk has sort of hindered some of the things that I enjoyed. The threads.
I can't imagine.
The threads definitely been pulled where I'm like, oh, boy, that doesn't work either, does it? But I think that, you know, overall I would say, oh, yeah, you know, it was fine. It's not a film that I'll buy. It's not a film that I would suggest people see unless they have an interest in it just on their own merits, you know, unless they just say, oh, that looks interesting. I'll go see that. I wouldn't encourage it, I don't think, for someone that I wouldn't push them to go see it like I may, you know, just some other films that I enjoy.
Old Boy.
Old Boy.
No, that's his stupid movie.
Did you ever
tell Cruise that I was the one that told you to watch that?
No, I saw that a long time ago. But
oh, no, I know. But I was like, show, you should watch Old Boy. I want to see how Cruise reacts. I didn't know it was going to be the bullet of the move of the show.
The worst movie of all time. All
right. Well, you still have a lot of stuff coming up. You got a lot in store for you yet, Cruise. So
here's I do want to bring up these two small points. I think they're funny. So the whole rhino attack happens at the end of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this little boy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. The trying to pull at your heartstrings moment.
And so I'm assuming, again, by the language of this movie, you can only sometimes go by what a movie shows you. There's some stuff you can, you know, figure out on your own. You can figure out they got from A to B in a car. I don't need to see people in cars. But certain times there's only what movies show you. So the movie shows this little boy in his house with his mom. This is after the 5 months of no Spider-Man. And then suddenly they're on the street watching this terrible crime take place, and he's dressed up as Spider-Man. So I guess the mom said, like, honey, let's go. Let's go look at this horrendous scene taking place on Fifth Avenue.
There's news downtown that there's a guy that's dressed up like a Spider-Man villain sort of thing, so we should go check it out.
A big mechanical.
It might be your dad.
It could be your dad. Maybe Spider-Man.
Just like, let's make a DNA connection.
Yeah, it's probably like a let's see if Spider-Man will show up because you're a big fan of Spider-Man, and yes, the guy has machine guns and stuff, but we're not going to worry about it. We're still going down there because it's Sunday and I don't have anything to do to occupy you, right. So here's what we're doing.
And then so then the kid goes across the police barrier, which
is because the mom's primary concern is not what her child's doing in this dangerous environment.
Who cares? He goes past the police barrier, which is a 2x4 piece of wood. When you really think about it, behind the wood, totally fine. Once he goes beyond the wood, oh my god!
Right.
Everyone loses their fucking shit.
But it's just the mom. Like, the mom is like, he can stand here and watch the Spider-Man, or not even watch the lack of Spider-Man, but like, as soon as he crosses the barrier, ape shit.
Right. Yep.
And no cops will do anything. Oh, well, one cop will be like, kid, don't.
Yeah, we're hiding behind car doors, which will definitely prevent us from getting killed.
Stop! Yeah, I think at the end of the day, I mean, like I said, I mean, there are people that like this movie. I think at the end of the day, I think maybe it just comes down to what you want in your storytelling. And for me, I've always been about character. I don't really care about plot, you know what I mean, and all those other things. Mm-hmm. And some people, I have friends who don't like character films. They don't like movies like Frances Ha. They don't like shows like Girls because they're like, nothing's happening. People are just sitting around talking. Like, they don't like those kinds of things. I love them and I eat them up. So for my thing, my primary thing with storytelling is character motivation. Why are people doing what they're doing? And the fact that now, after talking for an hour and a half, I still could not tell you why anyone does what they do besides, I don't want to die and I'm lonely, I guess. This film just doesn't work on a fundamental level for me. And also the fact that I've heard a lot of people say, like, oh, it's just supposed to be fun. Okay, I can excuse, like, it's just supposed to be fun for, like, an 80s slasher movie that's 80 minutes long. This movie's 2.5 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
You better be trying to say some kind of crap.
Yeah, at least whether they'll talk about it or not, at least they're trying to say something in the Star Trek Into Darkness, right? With the whole, oh, it's a rock, it's this is just like the U.S. invading, blah, 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 blah. Yep. At least they're doing that in that film. Here, it's just long and ponderous and too many stories and kind of an absolute mess.
When you think about true, like what they did with Norman Osborn too, I'm like, so I guess Norman Osborn turned into a witch and then died.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What a great
so
character.
So the person walking around that
is not Norman Osborn.
It's not Norman Osborn.
It's a character named Mr. Fierce.
So it makes me think, like, really, this is what you got Chris Cooper for? Like, unbelievable.
Well, there's a deleted scene, so therefore, I don't give a shit. It doesn't count. If it's not in the movie, it's not in the literature. There's a deleted scene when Mr. Fierce is walking through the hallway, and, like, there's the octopus arms and all this other stuff. And Norman Osborn is, like, Walt Disney'd. Like, his head's frozen in a jar. And Mr. Fierce is, like, it's coming together, old friend. But again, not in the movie, so therefore, it doesn't count.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, so I think that that brings us to an end. Mrs. Zelig, is there anything else that you wanted to drop in, maybe about my mother, before we wrap up?
Well, I think I'm on your side where, well, I'm not going to speak for you, but I should, because if you don't agree with me on this, you're an idiot. But,
oh, okay.
I know we talked about the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies, and I fucking hated them. Those.
I think my takeaway is still a little up in the air on how you feel about Tobey Maguire.
Well, let me tell you, I fucking hate Tobey Maguire.
Oh, okay.
And I fucking hate Kirsten Dunst. And I fucking hate the sham of Spider-Man movies that they thought that were good. And I also hate fake screaming into a microphone for each movies and then using them for all three.
Hmm.
So,
you're talking about the Wilhelm scream?
No. Yes. That having been said, I like the new take on Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
There were things about this movie that I did not enjoy.
Sure.
There were just.
It was just kind of.
I'm in a hall.
Yeah, it was just kind of a mess.
There were just hokey scenes. There were things that didn't make sense, like Jamie Foxx's electricity, but he can move into one person that you can apparently kill with the battery.
Is like, his suit electric too? Could his suit dissolve and undissolve? What material is that?
Yeah, apparently it could. Apparently it could. So maybe it was just he like created the suit like Dr. Manhattan.
I didn't want to be naked.
Sort of.
I don't want to show my electric D.
That's the name of his group, the group that's in his head.
Yeah, right. Electric D.
That's his album cover.
I like electric that. D. I like how even at this moment, Cruz decides to say electric D and just not say electric dick. I like how she censors herself.
Why did the electric powers close the gap in his teeth?
I have no idea.
Yeah, that was another thing. I very clearly noticed the huge gap that wasn't there anymore.
You know, they really did it. They did a masterful job of making a very subtle Jamie Foxx character with his pocket protector and his comb hair and the gap in his teeth. I didn't know we were watching Milhouse's Friends from The Simpsons.
It was ridiculous. Well, Cameron, wrapping us up, do you have anything else to say about Amazing Spider-Man?
I'm not a big proponent for the fan edit, you know what I mean, where people take movies and then they do their own edits. But I think if I went and took these two films and just had all the Andrew Garfield, Emma Stone scenes and Spider-Man flying around and it was 80 minutes, I think it'd make a pretty sweet movie.
Yeah, I think I'm
not going to do that.
I genuinely do like a lot of the actual special effects and fighting and the relationship stuff between Gwen and Peter. I think that works fine. I think the overall I think the overall plot of both films are problematic at best.
And that is the writer's fault. That's the problem that you get into where you don't have one or two people writing. You have 72 people writing.
Yeah, you have.
For romantic comedies, they're like, oh my god, they're all doing these things and we're all writing about it. Like, fuck you guys. No, you need to have like one or maybe two people writing a plot.
Yeah, when you have a lot of writers, you have producers.
Too many cooks in the kitchen.
That's right. You have producers that are involved. You have a lot of stuff that we've mentioned.
Well, there's a difference. There's a difference. The original Spider-Man series of films, they hired the writer of Jurassic Park. They hired a Pulitzer Prize winning writer, and they hired the writer of Ordinary People.
Right.
These series of films hired the guy who wrote John Travolta's Basic.
Transformers, like
the guys who wrote the Transformers movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, except for Tobey Maguire. Do you not remember him? Because he was the worst Spider-Man of all time.
I feel like if this was cast differently, maybe Cruz would have enjoyed the first three films a little more.
Tobey Maguire dies and Kirsten Dunst dies and I don't have to punch Cameron in the face and we are friends. Like,
I have no problem with Tobey Maguire and I like Melancholia.
Boom. Stupid. Tobey Maguire is the worst Spider-Man ever.
Oh, did you see the 70s one? There's a 70s one at CBS.
You know
what? Not
I
great.
Make a better Spider-Man than Tobey Maguire.
I'm gonna say maybe.
It'll definitely be it'll be more entertaining in some ways. Okay, on that note, I'm going to wrap us up. If you have any comments, suggestions, or movies you'd like to hear us talk about, specifically for this show, for Podshots, you can email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @plainlabelpod, where you can follow me. I'm @ericwilliams79. We have a Facebook page for the show, and you could like it. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. Say that you enjoyed this sort of rambling mess and you wanted to help us out, you could go over to our website, which is plainlabelpodcast.tumblr.com, and you could click on the Amazon link over on the right-hand side. What that does is it takes you over to Amazon's homepage, and then everything is the same for you. But this time, anytime you buy anything on Amazon, it helps us out. It doesn't cost you anything extra. It doesn't change anything for you. It just helps us out. Helps us pay the bills. Helps us pay for the movie tickets to go see films like...
It helps us deal with Cameron and his really ridiculous obsession with Spider-Man 1.
Ridiculous.
You know what, though? I'm not as ridiculous as Aunt May, who apparently doesn't know after age 11, boys masturbate in their room. Why don't you knock on the door? Dummy.
So, I would like to thank our regular co-host, Mrs. Rachel Zelag, for coming on. And if people wanted to find her online, they could find her over at Facebook or on Twitter @LadyZelag. And then, of course, I want to thank Cameron for coming on. If they wanted to find you online, where would they find you, Cameron?
They can find me at twitter.com/JurassicAlien or check out my shows, Cameron Watches Movies, or the show I do with Eric, where I'm usually the nice one.
Usually. You were definitely last time in our animated discussion.
Yep. What is it like being the nice one?
It's not easy. It's not easy being me.
You'll find out about it eventually.
No, I won't. Never.
So thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another co-host and another film.